Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 410. Science Faction, I call BS!
I'm coming off a victory, so I'm feeling great.
You mean when you lost?
Oh, no, no. I listened to that episode before I came here. At the end, I had won on points. No, don't know.
You had lost
to
by trying to cheat. But
and then afterwards, he said, congratulations, Damon, you've won, is what I would have said if you didn't try to cheat.
Yes.
I went back and listened to that episode
again. You should
listen
to it again.
So you just purposely edited out the evidence of me cheating.
No, I was there. Everybody saw it. They thought it was horrible.
So you've just gone straight into, we don't even need to lie about an instance anymore. We just create our own instances.
I am a king of instances. And speaking of your king of instances, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy, and with me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great, and I need to go throw out all the instant rice in my house. I'm not going to have you lord over anything in my house.
Me and Uncle Ben will tell you how to live.
Wow, he's like Uncle Ben, except the exact opposite, a lot more racist.
All right, and of course, our science guest host for the afternoon, Dr. Troy Sandberg. Dr. Troy, how are you doing?
Doing good. I heard last week Damian cheating and pretending not to. And
it
I also
was.
Heard you throw some shade at me, Damian.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to be
he
back
did.
Here to put
That's
you in
right.
I used you as a comical example because you are the antithesis of all the
That is right. Dr. Troy's gonna come and fuck you up.
I said, you know what? I'm doing a walkout. I'm walking out of this meeting.
Oh, dear. I call BS the game where I read four science news articles, some of which are real, some of which are BS standing for bad science. Are you guys ready to play?
Just like somebody who's about to be waterboarded, you know, no matter what answer they give, they're not actually ready to be waterboarded.
Well, not necessarily true.
Bring it, pussy.
Yeah. Like, so watch, Damien, let's go through the responses. Excuse me, would you like to be waterboarded?
Can we use semen instead?
Okay, you threw me off my game. Now I got to rethink, reset. You've gained yourself some time.
Exactly. But on the downside, I see all the guards coming in a bucket. Oh, my God. They're making it a reality.
I got to go get that cement mixer now that has all the cement.
Oh, the CIA has a wheelbarrow full of
Oh, Dr. Troy, you ready to kick some ass on this one?
Oh, yeah.
All right, and for those of you guys who have not heard this before, these are all independent variables, meaning they can all be true, all be false, or any combination of in between. And because Dr. Troy is the superstar of I Call BS, the only person
Despite
to ever
that I won.
Not only get numerous perfect scores, but actually have read on numerous occasions all the articles in there, we have our special, harder-than-usual Dr. Troy version of I Call BS.
I keep telling you, though, I intentionally now, because my first year on this show, I had always
you
read all
knew
the articles.
Them.
And then it wasn't fun, so now I avoid articles.
Now you hinder yourself.
On.
Even then, I still have to make it harder because you have too much of a background.
See, yeah, that's bullshit. You have, because of this game, which is a sham. Like, if this was a real game where you came in and beat an idiot
The way you play it is a sham. That's for damn
God
sure.
Goddamn you. But this is a man who would have been reading 10 times as many science articles every week, but he does it just to play this game.
That's right. How do you feel about that, Damien? How do you feel about this? All right, let's move right on. So I Call BS.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I Call BS.
You gaslighting son of a bitch.
All right, article number one. Just in time since the most recent record-breaking in 2015, NASA's new X-59 supersonic jet will debut in 2020 and will probably fulfill Lindbergh's Law, the aviation version of Moore's Law, in which every 5 years or less, a new non-rocket plane is created that breaks the fastest aviation speed record. Damien, is this science? Or bad science.
This is bad science. Under a normal, sane America, yes, perhaps that could have happened. But since our current presidential branch is insane, we both know, we've covered this article. He has diverted all the Jet Propulsion Lab's funds to creating newer and more extreme flavors of Mountain Dew.
I want Code Orange. Like, pick that up.
The Jet Propulsion Lab has a half pipe there now.
All right. And Dr. Troy.
All right, so this, I had not heard of Lindbergh's Law. This is what, every how many years?
5 years.
Every 5 years, but it's just that the record gets beaten?
No. Yes.
Okay, well, Moore's Law is like every
doubles,
X years, yeah. And so that
this is not
see,
an exponential.
Gets exponentially better.
We would be going, I think, near the speed of light at this point.
This is gameable, though, because like what Lindbergh and his descendants maybe have an incentive to keep this law true. And so right. they're just like, hey, let's not even bother working on it.
Wait a second. Didn't his descendants disappear?
That was to distract from the fallacy of the law. Right. Oh, we better lose the kids.
Fair enough.
Or NASA just has a rocket where every 5 years they just crank the fuel 5% yeah. higher. They're like, oh, look, we set a new record.
If you listen, I said non-rocket. That's a very important part of this. These are all motor-driven planes.
Okay. This is NASA doing it. I mean, yeah, I have to guess because I don't know if they're doing this. I would say false, maybe because they're just spending their time on more important stuff.
Yeah, it just seems like creating a faster biplane. Yeah. It seems like there's better things we could be doing.
All right. Article number two. Last week, the deputy health minister of Iran went on TV to address the fear that the Iranian government was underreporting the extent of the coronavirus outbreak in that country, as he was visibly suffering from a serious coronavirus infection. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science. While Iran is going through a coronavirus outbreak, I do not believe that he was saying that the government was underreporting. If anything, he was playing the propaganda line.
Mm.
And he was not clearly suffering from the coronavirus outbreak. Far worse. It was just a really weird herpes outbreak. It was just, that's all I could say.
Why did I have to schedule this day for the press conference? This is so embarrassing.
Yeah, the deputy had even more herpes. So
hold on. Well, what if we just give you a black eye? You say you got beat up in a fight. People will think your lips busted.
Yeah, somebody gave me the black eye, then kissed me really deep and gave me this sore.
All right, Ed, Dr. Troy.
All right, well, I don't know if Iran is suffering from coronavirus issues right now, but he was visibly suffering from coronavirus. I mean, one, you can't – I mean, he could have maybe been sick, but that's not like, oh, he definitely has coronavirus. It's not like smallpox where you can just look at him and be like, oh, yeah, they have this
thing. Didn't say you could tell it from that. I just said that he was suffering from it.
Well,
you
okay.
said visibly.
Yes, visibly. Yeah, you could be visibly suffering from the coronavirus.
He would have been visibly sick then, and then maybe they found out afterwards, oh, yeah, he actually had the coronavirus. But I would hope someone visibly sick would not be stupid, even if it weren't with the coronavirus,
yeah.
would not be stupid enough to come make a public announcement while, like, sweating profusely and almost dying.
We swear you're not going to get sick.
Guys, don't worry. Like, oh, wait, I need a breather right now. Like,
fortunately, this is the Middle East. It's just really fucking hot. And you don't disobey the Ayatollah.
So I'm going to say false just because it sounds like a ridiculous
right. All right. Article number three. A new paper shows a very strong correlation with a likely causal mechanism between solar weather and gray whale beachings. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science. It is not solar weather. It was solar panels, which, as we all know and have covered on the show, is deflecting light from the sun into the oceans,
what?
Making it hotter. No. And they're just like, I need to get out of this hot tub and go up into that cool, dry land.
You want to know what's funny? You almost accidentally verbatim recited an actual conspiracy theory where they believe that we're reflecting like rays into the ionosphere and down into the ocean in order to boil it.
I'm sorry, I meant to say that as Alex Jones. Solar panels are reflecting gay frogs off of them and turning the oceans gay.
All right, and Dr. Troy.
So I don't know how, what do you say, sperm whales?
Gray whales.
Gray whales. I don't know how they navigate, but I know that some animals, like birds, can detect magnetic field lines mm-hmm. and use that in their migrations. And the sun goes through a lot of crazy plasma physics, fluid dynamics, and sunspots and mm-hmm. solar flares. It has its own weather that sends out solar wind and hits the Earth's magnetosphere and could affect magnetic fields on mm-hmm. Earth. And so if gray whales had migration patterns where they oriented themselves to some extent through magnetic field lines, I could see those being perturbed in a way that maybe they think they're going on the right route and they accidentally mm-hmm. beach themselves. But then, I mean, to beach, you would have to get way high up, not be swimming.
A running start.
Not be swimming low down, and also there would be really minuscule effects unless it were some large solar storm. So I'm going to say false. I think the mechanism is potentially plausible, but I think it might be too small of an effect, and I don't even know if gray whales actually navigate that way. So,
all right, article number four. Scientists have reported on observations of the largest explosion ever recorded by humans in the universe. An explosion that left a crater 15 times the size of the Milky Way. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science, because I have to imagine Troy would be cleaning the semen off of the inside of his car, pants, whatever he was in.
Would he be so excited about the huge explosion?
Yes.
What about Dr. Nick? Would they? Was it both of them, or
they were in each other's mouths?
Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah, and also clearly, how are you going to leave a crater if there's nothing to hit, Bobby? Unless there was a planet the size of the Milky Way. 15 times
minimum, because just get rid of it. Have to be at least 16, you know, get half on each side.
Exactly. So this is clearly bad science. I say this as somebody who is literally the Dunning-Kruger effect, but for applied to physics, who is the personification of that principle.
All right, and Dr. Troy.
So I actually haven't heard about this, and despite it being a really cool event, I imagine I would if, you know, because I'm into space stuff, but I didn't have a lot of like looking at random articles this week, so I could have missed it. But all right, so let me clarify. You said crater.
Yes.
So I know that the supermassive black holes at the centers of galaxies can undergo really violent events like quasars that literally have, you know, shock waves and stuff larger than the size of the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's 15 times the Milky Way with a single explosion, you could potentially do that with a big enough supermassive black hole. But by crater, crater implies just a void. And since this is in space, are you saying like everything within 15 Milky Ways got vaporized and pushed out, or there was just an explosion of this sort of diameter?
Objection.
But
objection.
No, he's asked for a clarification of the definition of crater, which is fair because it's used in an analogous term.
Yeah, ambiguous wording.
So in this case, yes, I would say that in a large celestial body, there is a gap whom we could analyze the structure of to determine that it was caused by an explosion.
Objection. Objection, Your Honor. Your Honor.
Okay. Overruled.
All right.
Fuck
that,
you.
With that clarified wording, I would think that, yeah, maybe we saw the aftermath of some crazy, you know, quasar explosion that literally blew a galaxy apart. And it's at the point now where, because obviously the shockwave would have to propagate, it's got to move at the speed of light, and galaxy size, that's taken tens of thousands of years. But it could leave a void behind in the same way that we can look out in space and see where galaxies has collided together and the spiral patterns they form afterwards. So I'll say science.
Yeah, or just, I mean, imagine an explosive going off in the sand. You know, it leaves a void where it used to be. And if there's sand around, you can tell how big that explosion was. All right, let's go back and see how you guys did. Follow along at home and see how you did. Article number one. Just in time, since the most recent record-breaking in 2015, NASA's new X-59 supersonic jet will debut in 2020 and will probably fulfill Lindbergh's Law, the aviation version of Moore's Law, in which every 5 years or less, a new plane is created that breaks the fastest aviation speed record. Both of you guys thought this one was false, and this one is bad science. Now, the X-59 is a NASA plane that is supersonic, that is set to debut this year, and it's long-awaited. However, it is not going to break the aviation record. And this is why I wanted to include this.
Because, is it because Lindbergh's law is actually a law about child murder?
There is no Lindbergh's law. I made it up as a corollary to Moore's law. However, here is why I thought this is super interesting. And Dr. Troy, I wonder if you find this as interesting as I did, because I only found this out about a year ago and it blew my mind. What do you think is the fastest a non-rocket plane has ever gone?
I don't even, you know. I have no clue, but Mach 10,
okay,
you know? Like scramjets and stuff, all that can count.
I mean, it's, I don't think we have them, so.
Not solid, not solid rocket boosters, though, that's the only thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, Mach 10.
So we're only at Mach 3.
Oh, okay.
But here's the thing. The plane that set the record that's still held today was built in 1959. The SR-71 Blackbird, to this day, is the fastest plane that has ever been built.
Wow.
In 1959. Think of the cars people were driving in 1959. That is the fast. Okay, to be perfectly honest,
that's why the SR-71 had sweet flames on the side.
Quite literally, a stock Toyota Corolla could beat a race car from that era. That gives you an idea of what we've done automotively. And in flight terms, that is still the fastest aircraft ever. It set the record in the mid-1970s. Nobody's come close.
That just shows you probably how unimportant it is of a record. And, like, we're not devoting our resources to getting faster speeds.
Maybe.
We're doing other things.
There is some interesting stuff, though. Like, it could, you know, we used it as a spy plane. It wasn't like a fighting plane. It was a spy plane. And the idea was it could fly over Russia and get pictures really fast. Now we have satellites, so we don't need it as much. It may come back into vogue, though, because it's got a bunch of interesting things. Like, its missile avoidance system was just to go faster because no missile could catch it, which is kind of nuts. But it always is crazy
to me.
The
X-Men were never shot down.
To me, it's kind of like being in the Byzantine Empire, where you look back to the high technology of the Roman times. There's very few times in human history where you look backwards and see some kind of great technology that nobody can get to yet, or at least they don't get to. And there are these weird little blips. It's not that we couldn't build a better SR-71. We absolutely could, but we haven't. So to me, it's always really interesting when we look back in the past, in this case, more than 50 years for the design, engineering, and building of the fastest plane ever made. You'd think that would have been like done over and over again, especially if, think about it this way, that plane flight or that plane building was closer to the origin of flight than it was to us. So the guys building that plane were closer to Orville and Wilbur in their fucking weird cloth plane than they are to modern day. That's crazy.
Makes me wonder what all the crazy new planes the government has that are probably top secret are now. Because obviously, well, maybe they have beaten the record and we just don't know about it.
But now, nowadays, it would be really hard to do those type of tests with all the cameras and the good quality HD stuff that you can just point at the sky.
Isn't that because you've told me the story of the SR-71, is that it was so intense. It required so many expensive resources.
Yeah.
Like, you can only build.
They used the world's supply of titanium in the 1950s to build 32 SR-71 Blackbirds. Ironically, it was all in Russia, the country they were trying to spy on. They had to buy it, like, surreptitiously through, like, middlemen and stuff. It's a plane that goes so fast that its surface temperature heats up to 3,000-plus degrees because of friction with the atmosphere, and it's flying at 80,000 feet, so there's almost no friction with the atmosphere. It's so fast, the windshields can't be made out of any kind of glass because they'd melt, and they have to be made out of quartz stone so they don't melt inside. It's fucking crazy.
Most of our jets now focus on the much more cost-effective not being seen, like on radar. Like, they're not super fast, but they're stealth.
Yeah. I mean, this was a stealth plane, too. It was one of the first ones. But anyway, really interesting thing. It's just one of those weird things.
And that you can't track the flash.
Just one of those weird things that if you tell somebody who's super into technology and knows a bunch about science and stuff, hey, did you know the fastest plane ever was built in the late 50s, early 60s time? You'd be like, that can't be right. That shouldn't be right in 1975.
What about fastest airspeed record, including rockets and stuff?
Well, then it's space flights, right? So then it's somebody re-entering the atmosphere or something like that.
You know what the fastest moving man-made object ever was?
Voyager 2?
Maybe it got up to that speed eventually, but something we launched. Launch speed. It was a manhole cover from atomic tests in the 1940s where we were doing underground tests.
And it shot it into space?
Yeah, someone accidentally didn't close proper doors, and so it was like a nuclear potato cannon that launched this thing up into space, and I forget the exact speed, but it was caught on like one frame of the high-speed camera enough to say that, oh yeah, it's going so fast it's going to escape the solar system.
And somebody probably did some nerd math tracks and was like, it went by Pluto in 1994. That's great.
And they don't talk about the scientist who was standing on it at the time. I'm just going to tie my shoes right here. And, wow.
Excuse me, Dr. Splinter, don't. All right, article number 2. Last week, the deputy health minister of Iran went on TV to address the fear that the Iranian government was underreporting the extent of the coronavirus outbreak in the country, as he was visibly suffering from a serious coronavirus infection. Both of you guys thought this one was false, but this one is science, and you can watch it on the internet.
Oh, man.
He's literally mopping flop sweat from his brow as he's profusely sweating. He doesn't look like, he's kind of sick.
Oh, a Persian guy who's sweating.
He's literally going, listen, we're being honest about the coronavirus. It's not that bad. I need to sit down. Like, it's ridiculous. Here's the deal. I'm not sure how this happened epidemiologically, but right now Iran has the largest number of deaths outside of China from the new coronavirus. Anytime we see those authoritarian regimes, we talked a little bit about this before, in some ways they're helpful because in China they can just go, guess what? Everybody shut down, you're on quarantine, nobody can leave their house, and there's nothing you can do because you don't have civil rights. So to that extent, it can be quite helpful. Sometimes, especially in cases like Iran, they can also be bad when the mantra becomes, we actually don't have that many infections. It's not that big a deal. I believe they have like 19 deaths Again, the second biggest amount of deaths outside of China. But they only reported like 100 some odd cases, which would give it like a 10% mortality rate. So either they have the worst mortality rate case on Earth, or more likely they're not actually accurately reporting the amount of infections they have by a factor of like 10. And so what we have to look at is, one, what are the dynamics that are going on there? But two, what does that mean for the countries around it? You know, there's a lot of destabilized regions there. Viruses do not respect borders as these radiate from Iran. Think of this. Think of the future of this infection will base around hotspots that are currently here. So hotspots like China, hotspots like Iran, hotspots like Thailand, they are going to be the epicenters of future pandemics as this spreads out. And in general, we can usually say, genetically speaking, they'll also be the hotspots of the most genetic diversity because they're kind of big origin points, meaning we're going to see the different sects probably come out in places like Iran or Thailand. Super, super interesting. Go watch the video. It's fucking ridiculous to watch the guy talk about, well, we don't have a bad coronavirus. Oh, God damn it. I'm fucking so sweaty.
I remember when Sean Spicer was the press secretary and just reacting to questions, having to justify yeah. stuff. I'm wondering about you can make an argument that he was suffering from the coronavirus. Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, kids in cages. Yeah, that's what we do.
Did anyone question this Iranian guy? Like, hey, are you doing all right, man?
Yeah, what well,
are you?
Like, no, because it's Iran. And so everybody just stood there looking straight forward going, are you fucking seeing this, bro? And eventually he came out and said, like, sorry, I have coronavirus. It's like a day later. Anyway, all right, on to article number three. A new paper shows a very strong correlation with a likely causal mechanism between solar weather and gray whale beachings. Both of you guys thought this one was false, and this one is science. The paper looked at 31 years of detailed solar weather data and compared it with the same time periods of gray whale beachings. And they were able to show a very strong correlation. Not just that, but they did more detailed investigation. We know for a fact certain causes of gray whale beaching. Strong sonar from naval radars will sometimes drive them out of the water. They think it's like, you know, hearing a loud noise yelling in your head. We know that
being chased by Japanese fishing.
Yes, yes. Bad health, all of those. So usually when there are strandings, we can tell. We can say, hey, this one's been hit by a harpoon. We did naval tests in this area a couple days ago. These are the reasons. Not only do these correlate strongly with gray whale beachings, they correlate strongly with gray whale beachings of healthy animals. And we know the difference because when an animal that's about to die beaches itself and dies. When a healthy animal beaches itself and then tries to get back in the water. So some ideas. Dr. Troy brought up a big one that they're thinking. Magnetoreception, the ability to use the Earth's magnetic field to navigate. If the magnetic field gets perturbed by these sunstorms, they might not be able to navigate. Here's something that threw a wrench in that plans, though. Again, they had this detailed data and they went back. They were able to show that more perturbments of the Earth's magnetic field, which can happen naturally, we don't need sunspots or sun weather to cause them. Natural perturbance of the Earth's magnetic field do not cause these beachings. So it can't just be the magnetic field. If maybe the sun affects the magnetic field in a specific way that does this, but we're not 100% sure. We don't actually know. This is one of those, hey, look, we just noticed this really strong correlation. We can't necessarily say why this is happening, but here are a few ideas why. The solar storm might affect more than just the radiation. It can actually affect the amount of light and the type of UV light that is hitting the Earth at any given time. We're not usually attuned to that because we have an atmosphere that blocks a lot of things that would normally hurt us, including UV light, or at least filter some of it. However, when you're an animal that stays close to the surface in the water, the differences in the rays of the sun might actually cause you to act differently. This would be especially true for aquatic mammals, really big ones in particular, because they have a huge surface area that is up close to the top of the water that they then absorb stuff. In general, aquatic mammals tend to have less solar protection than we do. That's why we have melanin in our skin and stuff. They have less of that because they have to deal with it less when they go under the water. So they seem to be more sensitive at times of increased UV rays. It might be that that is the case. It might be the magnetic reception that we're just not seeing.
Having a shield of barnacles, can
yes,
that
Yes, totally.
Absorb?
But they're all on the bottom, so they got to go belly up for it to work.
That's why most whales swim upside down.
And lastly, article number four, scientists have reported on observations of the largest explosion ever recorded by humans in the universe, an explosion that left a crater 15 times the size of the Milky Way. Damien thinks this is false. Dr. Troy thinks this is true. And this one is science. Congratulations, Dr. Troy, on raping Damien.
Wow.
Brutally.
I have my whistle. I'm yelling, fire, fire, fire. Nobody came.
Oh, indeed.
Except for Dr. Troy.
So they found this by analyzing the crater that it left inside of a huge star cluster. So this is a giant star cluster, and we noticed this shape that was basically a void within the center of it. Now, people had thought before maybe this was the result of an explosion, but they couldn't tell until they got more accurate data from a telescope that would allow them to actually measure the internal shape and volume of that crater. And they were able to show pretty definitively that it absolutely has to be from an explosion. This isn't a natural forming phenomenon. They can tell this by the distribution of particles on the outer edges, where things have been forced, pushed, and the shape and size of it. And their idea, which is, by the way, this is about 390 million light years from us, so a decent ways away. They think it was, as Dr. Troy mentioned, a supermassive black hole in one of the galaxies within it. And specifically, the jets of radiation and material spewing from that black hole, which caused this gigantic explosion and this crater that is now there. Very, very interesting, because we can actually measure it and go, boom, boom. Based on this volume, based on what's around it, we can actually measure the amount of force that was put out in this. Not only is it the biggest explosion we've ever measured, but biggest one by many fold. So not even close to the closest thing next to it.
Michael Bay is just like, how do we capture this huge explosion on film?
It's pretty awesome to think about. Like, imagine we lived in a galaxy where our supermassive black hole had enough stuff around it and it was moving in a certain way that it was going to, you know, turn into a quasar and explode. And you can sterilize an entire galaxy.
Yeah.
Like hundreds of billions of stars. And so that could take, like, maybe that just took out like a bunch of sentient life
maybe,
in this other galaxy.
Maybe that's the Fermi paradox, is all those motherfuckers were in those 15 galaxies.
So what you're saying is that every creature in this galaxy just becomes sterilized and then kills themselves because
they're fixed now?
I don't understand.
Yeah, the black hole ties their tubes.
My nuts exploded. Kill me.
It's super interesting. I love hearing about those big, giant things. And I always love, again, it's one of those things that we actually can't process in our brains. It's like when you hear there are 7 billion people on Earth, you can know what that is intellectually, but try and picture it in your head or get an idea for it, and it's just kind of beyond your pale. This is similar. Try and think of something 15 times the size of the Milky Way, and you can think of it as a conceptual sense, but you can't really get a feel of what that is. What's interesting is that we still find these things, right? Like the biggest things in the universe, biggest explosion in the universe. And we're still finding things like that in 2020. It's always interesting to think what that next thing is going to be.
We're actually just seeing the doves in the background of the explosion.
That was a John Woo production. Oh, that is joint. Where you got that wrong. All right. Thank you, Dr. Troy, for coming back for 410. And thank you, audience, for coming back, where you learned all about NASA's new supersonic plane, how the deputy health minister of Iran got coronavirus on TV, why the sun's weather causes gray whales to beach themselves, and the largest explosion ever recorded by humans in the universe. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 411.
Did you know that the punishment for adultery in Iran is actually contracting the coronavirus?
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.